Ladies and gentlemen, Galen Clavio here. It's the Bracket Racket on Hoops HD. Back once again, another week of college basketball talk. Happy to be joining you. A lot to talk about this week. There's been some interesting games. There's been some movement. And obviously, you know, we're getting into the home stretch here as it's the 26th of January. Next show that we do will be into February, and we're going to be in a situation, of course, where, you know, you're only about 6 weeks from the tournament draw at that stage. So this is always where the fun really accelerates, and we're happy to be able to be part of it and bring you our analysis and perspective. Joining me on the show tonight is always David Griggs. David, what's going on? I'm glad your people could clear this time tonight.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. We were originally scheduled to go at 9, but after deciding to move it to 10, I had to call my people, and I don't expect anyone in the audience to really understand that. You have to be important to have people, but you always have to clear changes like that with them. I'm just glad it was able to work out.
We're so happy to have you with us. We really are.
Yeah.
Kyle Lamb joining us as well. Kyle, are you? How's the polar vortex working where you're living at this point?
Well, that's a little bit of a loaded question, Galen. But I will tell you one thing. You know, I can't sympathize with Griggs people, but I can sympathize with the mediocrity that is Clemson. I feel bad for Clemson basketball fans if there are even. I mean, such things may not even exist, but I do feel bad for them nonetheless. It's, you know, the old expression, go get them next time. I think Clemson fans are tired of hearing that.
Yeah, I mean, they are. I don't know. It's kind of like the Northwestern not making the NCAA tournament thing, except there are at least a few people who actively talk about Northwestern basketball on Twitter and elsewhere. I really don't see people talking about Clemson basketball. I mean, they'll talk about them when they're in the tournament, but that's been the extent of it. I'd like to see more talk of Clemson basketball. I think they've got a decent program. They've got an okay program history. It's nothing spectacular, but it's also nothing awful. But yeah, today was tough for them in a lot of ways.
I mean, at least with Northwestern making the tournament, you can understand, okay, making the tournament is a tougher step up for a program like that. But for Clemson, we're just talking about winning a single game once a year.
Yeah.
And they can't do that.
But play it once a year. That's the thing.
Right. Well,
I mean, sometimes it takes more than one attempt to get over that hump.
Well, and look, you also have to. You have to also keep in mind this is a conference that was created specifically for the University of North Carolina. Like it would be like it's like going to someone else's birthday party every year and expecting to get the largest piece of birthday cake. It's just not going to happen.
David Griggs expects that.
Get it.
He does. That David Griggs is very powerful when it comes to these things. Anyway, what we're talking about, if you're not familiar, folks, of course, Clemson was all full of hope this year because they thought they might break, was it a 58-game losing streak in North Carolina, Kyle?
I think it's not 57. I think tonight was 57. 57-game road losing streak at North Carolina.
Yeah, and they didn't do it. They got blown out, too.
Forever. They've never won in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, and it was an absolute just bloodletting by this North Carolina team. And they, you know, their strange season continues, and Clemson continues to ride the bubble. I do have some good news for Clemson fans, though. Despite the huge loss, I still have them in my field. I tried to take them out three times, and I could not get them out of the field. I mean, it was one of the more remarkable things. So you got that going for you, Clemson. Enjoy it while it's still there. Anyway, we're going to talk about a few of the games that we found interesting here over the past couple of days, and we're going to then talk about some of the elements of the S-curve that we're seeing as we've done our brackets, and then we'll preview what we have coming up this week. If you'd like to chat with us, you can tweet at us at HoopsHD. You can also write us a comment in the YouTube comment section that you're watching right now if you are indeed watching this live. Send those comments in. We'll get them up on the screen. We'll talk about them. If you're watching this or if you're listening to this on tape delay, you can always email us or just tweet us during the week at HoopsHD. We'd love to have you joining us as well for that. As if we've got a little bit of David Griggs camera issues. David, are you there? Are you okay?
Google just signed me out. Technical difficulties. What it was is that I was signed into my account and one of my people must have been signed in on their phone or something.
When he cleared it with his people, clearly he didn't clear it with all of them.
Well, one of my people will not be my people at this time tomorrow if this does not get rectified.
I'm sad that this is going the way that it is. Anyway, let's talk about a couple of games, a couple of teams from these past few days. Kyle, let's start with a team that you have been aggressively pimping here over the course of the last, year or so, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. They had a fascinating week. They on Monday, of course, they knock off Ohio State at home, 68-62. They turn around and they lose on the road to a pretty atrocious Penn State team. And then they turn around today and they beat everybody's darling in the Big Ten, the Minnesota Golden Gophers, 82-78 in a 70-possession game. Like, this is not a game, possession-wise, that you would have thought would have favored this Nebraska team, but this is two tournament-bound teams that they've beaten now in the past week. Have the Huskers turned a corner at this stage, in your opinion?
I want to say my perseverance was rewarded, Galen. We stuck with them. We had them all the way. This team, I really think it has turned the corner. I mean, they had Michigan. I mean, 2 weeks ago, they had Michigan on the ropes. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they really should have beat Michigan in Lincoln. And, I think it's a combination. I mean, they really have, Taron Petaway is playing great basketball. They're getting more consistent scoring from him. Gallegos, it was interesting because last year, they couldn't score the ball, and he was about the only guy that could score. And now he's kind of become their fourth option, which is nice because they've really got about three or four guys on the given night and go out and put the ball in the basket. I think you're seeing this team starting to blossom on the offensive end. They were playing well defensively for most of the year. Now they're also starting to play offense, and I think that that's really I think that lends itself to, as you say, turning the corner a bit.
Yeah. It's interesting because you look at the Big Ten right now. We're going to get to the big clash that happened last night at the top of the Big Ten standings. But, we've seen a fascinating natural separation now take place. If you look at the Pomeroy projections on records for the Big Ten, Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Ohio State are all projected at 10-8 or better. Down the stretch the rest of the way. Then you have this huge glob of teams projected below that. Indiana projected with 7 wins in the conference, Purdue with 6, Northwestern with 5, Nebraska with 7, even though they're way down the string of current records. And then, of course, Illinois and Penn State kind of bringing up the real pop out of that lower range and actually have a chance at making the tournament? Or are we basically just looking at a sample of 6 right now for the NCAAs from this conference?
Who was that directed to?
That was to Kyle. Sorry. Go ahead.
Good, because I wasn't listening.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure. The internet did funny things with your voice. I think you're still looking at 6. I won't rule out an Indiana stepping up to the plate and getting a bid, or Purdue has given some indication they might be able to go on a run, but they're still a little, they're not trustworthy right now. I think you're still looking at those 6 safely. I wouldn't be shocked if the Big Ten somehow got a 7th bid. I don't know if it's going to be Illinois. They look dead in the water to me. Maybe it's going to be Indiana. But, yeah, I mean, I think you're looking at safely 6. They could still get 7 somehow.
Let's talk about that Michigan-Michigan State game that we saw. And, David, let me go to you on this first. This is a Michigan State team, obviously, that's missing Brandon Dawson. They're missing Adrian Payne. Still, this is, they're playing a Michigan team that's missing Mitch McGarry, doesn't really have a point guard, per se, is playing a lot of young players. And yet Michigan jump into the lead at the end of the game. They end up holding on for the victory. They're in sole possession of first place. Is Michigan in play for a 1 seed from you at this stage?
No, not a 1 seed. I do think they're going to be high up on the 2, 3, or 4 line. I just don't see them getting ahead of Kansas, Arizona, Syracuse, teams like that. I mean, even if they run roughshod over the Big Ten, I don't think they'll get up there.
Well, okay, let's take that, though. Those 3, I agree, are ahead of Michigan, but who else is ahead of Michigan at this point in terms of what they've accomplished so far? I mean, if you look at what Michigan's done so far on the season, they're 15-4, they're 7-3 on the road, they've played the 5th toughest schedule, they've got wins on neutral courts against Florida State and Stanford, they won on the road against Michigan State, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Minnesota, and they beat Iowa at home. That's a pretty accomplished record, and when you look at the other teams that are in that mix, it's hard to find, in my opinion at least, teams that have comparable accomplishments at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, since you put, I mean, right after I got into that answer, I realized that my fourth number one seed at the moment is San Diego State, and I have Nova right behind them. So, right. And, you know, San Diego State did go into Utah State yesterday and win, which is something that, teams outside the 150 RPI have trouble doing, but one seeds could go in there and win pretty regularly. With that in mind, if they keep going at the clip they're going and they can finish first in the Big Ten, yeah, I could see them on the one line. I really could.
Utah State will tell you that teams outside the or inside the top 150 have trouble even wanting to play there.
Right. Kyle, what do you think about this? Michigan is a one seed at this stage?
I'm not buying into it yet. I think in terms of pure upper level, top tier wins, I mean, certainly you could make a great case for them, and I wouldn't begrudge anybody for saying it. But I still look at the overall, the depth of their non-conference resume. I'm not seeing a lot yet. Now, I think that they have an opportunity. If they keep playing the way they have, I think that they can make up for that. But I would still be more inclined to take a team that's been doing it over the course of you know, the whole season thus far. Now, I know you could say, well, who would that be? Because there's not a lot of teams out there.
I would ask that, yes.
Yeah, and I'm getting to that. I would say, even though they lost last week to Michigan, I would say Wisconsin, I think, has a bigger array of wins so far. Now, I'm not saying Wisconsin's better. I don't even know. They certainly don't have the top-tier wins that Michigan has. I would be inclined to stick with Wisconsin. Michigan's going to have to prove it to me a little bit longer. It's like I said in the email. I give them credit for winning at Michigan State, but, I mean, Michigan State was without two of their top, you know, four players. I have to take that with a grain of salt. And I don't know. I just want to see Michigan do it for a little longer before I put them up there yet.
That's fair. Go ahead, David. What were you going to say?
Well, yeah, this is the second time in a year we discovered yesterday that these two individuals from Michigan State that are out have been involved in a rather unusual, bizarre situation. Last year, the two of them got in a fight in a hotel lobby, you know, where the team was staying when they were on the road. And then this year, he goes and punches a table and breaks his hand.
Well, now, does anybody really believe he punched a table and broke his hand? Like,
he broke his hand.
I believe that, too. Is anybody gullible enough to think he was watching film and he punched the table? Like, there are people that actually believe that, are there?
I can believe he punched the table. I can't believe he punched the table because of being upset at watching himself on film.
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure he punched something. I don't think he punched a table, and I sure as hell don't think it had anything to do with watching the film.
I got
to
ask, is that the best Michigan State could come up with? I mean, who sat down in a room and said, okay, the excuse will be he punched a table after being upset at seeing himself on film? Who came up with this?
It seemed to work. I mean, did anybody in the media question it at all? All they thought, oh, what a competitor. He was so upset at his poor play that he broke his hand. No, but come on.
Well,
come
it's
on.
Like New Year's Eve. I mean, I started off with one bottle of champagne and then another and then another and then a, you know, a few more shots of whiskey and then some scotch. And then the next day, like, I just, while putting my sunglasses on, I scratched the hell out of my face.
Okay.
I gotta spend a New Year's with David Griggs sometime.
I don't know what happened there at all. But anyway, let's move on. And as we get off the Big Ten talk here for a minute, let's switch over to some of the other action that happened yesterday. First off, I want to talk a little bit about the Big East. We talked about them a bit last week as well. Providence really coming on strong. I mean, this has been a good week for them. Good last couple of weeks, really. They beat Creighton, Butler, and Xavier in consecutive home games. They're on a five-game winning streak. I have them in my S-curve this time around. I didn't have them in before, so they're their first time in now. They're 5-2 overall in the conference, and so they're tied with Xavier right now for third place. This team really looks pretty good at this point. I mean, they're playing okay on both sides of the ball. Nothing stellar, but really nothing to take away, I would say, on either side of the ball. And, you know, I think that given the injury situation that Providence had, David, you have to be pretty impressed with what they've been able to do so far in conference play.
Yeah, for sure. And, again, like Xavier and like a lot of the Big East teams, they've looked good at home. Now, the question is, I have them inside my field as well. They're on the bubble but inside of it. I think I had them on the 11 or 12 line, and that was before the Xavier game, so presumably they would be as good or better than they were before. But you have to be able to win when you pack a suitcase. And although Providence has done some things on the road, as has Xavier, they haven't really beaten anybody that's really good yet. So until I think they need at least
You don't think Creighton's really good?
They beat them at home.
Well, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, Galen, we've been doing this bracketology thing for over 10 years now, and I can honestly say this is the first opportunity I've got to say that they are nothing more than Dunkin' Donut heroes. I've never been able to say that before, but I can say it right now.
It's been a desert of sorts as far as Providence basketball success, so I'm glad they finally allotted you that opportunity, Kyle.
Yeah, I'm grateful for that.
You know, it is interesting because I feel like we kind of all stood around 2 weeks ago. We looked at the Big East and we were like, are there going to be tournament teams, period? I mean, it seems now with Providence's emergence, even though they haven't won much on the road, that at least there are four bona fide teams that can make the field out of this conference.
And I had Xavier on my seven line. So right. I don't think they're in any danger. But at the same time, I mean, beat somebody on the road.
And we should add that when Galen says they haven't won much on the road, their only win on the road has been Rhode Island. So much is
That's true. They did win a couple of neutral court games against Vanderbilt and LaSalle. Those kind of count. I mean, those aren't true road games, but they were away from home at least.
Yeah.
And they beat St. John's. No, they beat Athletic St. John's. Kyle, you forgot about that.
You're right. I did forget about that.
See, don't question.
How could I forget about all that talent?
Anyway, they'll have an opportunity in this upcoming week. They've got Marquette on the road, they've got DePaul on the road, and then actually, after a brief homestand against St. John's, they got to go back out on the road and play at Xavier and at Georgetown. So we're going to learn a lot about whether they can actually...
Yeah, we're going to learn about them coming up.
Yeah. So at least we got that going for us, which will be good. Let me jump to the head of the class in the Big East, Creighton, Kyle. Now, they beat up on Villanova, and that was the talk of the town. On Monday night, and then they follow that up with a 13-point win, easy win against Georgetown. No surprise there. But there's a lot of debate about this Creighton team as far as, you know, are they really that good? Ken Pomeroy has them second in the country in his rankings, and I think BPI-wise, they're 13th, which is still pretty good. But, you know, you're talking about the spread between a 1 seed and a 4 seed for Creighton in that particular spread there. Where would you put them on that spectrum at this stage, Kyle?
By merit or by potential?
By merit, by what they've done so far at this point.
Yeah, by merit, I would think about giving them a 2 or 3 seed. I think their offense is legit. I think in terms of just purely shooting the ball, this is one of the better teams we've seen in the last several years in college basketball. I mean, they've got 5 guys that can just absolutely light up a scoreboard from deep. I think they're offensively they're legit. My issue with them is defensively, this is not a team I would consider the second best team in the country. I mean, they've got a defensive efficiency right now that's barely hanging on to double digits. I mean, they're just inside of the top 100.
Right.
I think that they are capable of beating anyone in March. If that offense gets hot, they can certainly make a run. I just worry that, I mean, I think it's so cliche to say this because shooting is inconsistent for everybody. It's not just a team like Creighton. But I think especially with a team like Creighton that doesn't have a very good defense, they can't afford to have an off-night shooting. And I think that could catch up with them more than other teams.
Right.
Well, yeah, I said this in the email thread after their big win at Villanova. I really believe that if they shoot 60% from beyond the arc for the rest of the year, this Creighton team will at least make the Sweet 16.
Well, I mean, they're only shooting, what is it, 54, excuse me, they're shooting 43% from three, which on the season, which is the best in the nation.
It is.
And they're shooting 54% from two, which is 13th best in the nation. I mean, here's the thing, and I think we talked about this a little bit, I think last week or the week before. The argument is, well, nobody can sustain that sort of shooting in the tournament. And my question is, well, why not? I mean, we don't look at a team that has great defensive effort and say, well, they'll never be able to sustain that through the tournament. I feel like we're almost too critical of teams that shoot well and play well offensively because we think that that just simply can't be sustained. I almost think that's not fair at this stage because I think Creighton's demonstrated that, you know, they can hit from almost everywhere on the floor. They've got, you know, if you look at Raggi and Manigat, they've got guys who are both in the top 10 in both effective field goal percentage and true shooting percentage.
Gosh, that sounds like the name of a morning show on radio.
It does, yes. I agree.
Raggi and Manigat in the mornings.
I don't think they're going to do what they did against Villanova regularly. I think that even for as good of a shooting team as Creighton is, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. But if you look at the way that they've played, they have only had, I think, and I'll probably misquote this a little bit, but I believe they've only had one game this year where they did not score over a point per possession, and that was that weird game that they played against George Washington in that exempt tournament, you know, right around the end of November. Every other game, I mean, even games where they've struggled a little bit, they have been exemplary on offense. Even the Providence game, where they lost 81-68 and Doug McDermott was ill, they scored 68 points on 61 possessions. So, I mean, the idea that they're not going to be able to generate offense consistently, it's just, I mean, so far from the evidence that we've seen, it's simply not true.
Yeah, you know, I think what it comes down to, it's like you and I were chatting about last week. Look, you get these people that I love statistical analysis, but what you find is you find people that get caught up in statistical analysis without understanding statistical analysis. And look, there's a lot of variance in three-point shooting, and I think there's more variance in three-point shooting than anything else in the game of basketball. The problem is people assume that because there's more variance in three-point shooting, then they expect that there will always be so much variance in three-point shooting that you're bound to have an off night. And that's usually true, but that doesn't mean it's always true. And I think that that's what people are mistaking with Creighton. They assume that because they rely on three-point shooting or because they're good at it, that therefore they can't depend on it the rest of the season. Oh, I don't think that's true.
I thought people were saying that Creighton was essentially – I thought people were saying the opposite, that Creighton was a top 10 team and that they would go to the final. I mean, maybe it's just that the Big East circles that I slum in, but I thought people were overreacting the other way.
I think you're hanging out with the wrong people, I think, is the problem.
Well, I've got my people.
Your people have some odd perspective. No, from what I've heard, a lot of people are, you know, they've talked about. And mostly this happened after Creighton beat Villanova on Monday and they shot it up to number two in the ranking. It was that, oh, this is not really that good of a team and they're too reliant on shooting. That'll never work in the tournament. I reject that hypothesis, though, because I think any of these factors are so mitigatable. I don't know if that's a word, but I just will coin it for the hell of it. But
I'll check with my people.
Check with your people. But they're, you know, good defense is easily mitigated by changing the tempo or by taking particular types of shots. I mean, we've seen it over and over again. I mean, you know, you look at the teams that, you know, go to last year and, you know, look at the overall ratings that the teams had going into the tournament. You know, I mean, the team that had the best defense was Wisconsin, and Wisconsin lost in the tournament to Mississippi, and yeah, they held Mississippi under a point per possession in that game, but Wisconsin scored significantly worse than that. I think, what did they have? It was 57-46, and it was a 62-possession game. Wisconsin scored 0.74 points per possession. So the point is, even if you're right and that something is, you know, can potentially be taken out by something else, it doesn't necessarily mean that one has a trump card over the other. I think that if you look at teams that shoot the ball really well, there's no reason to simply ignore them simply because we don't think that you can that you can sustain it. It's kind of like the argument that gets made in football, where it's like, well, you can't rely on a good passing attack because that's too easily taken away. I think we've seen that that's not really necessarily true.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I just don't think they're the second best team in the country. I think they're very, very good.
Here's the thing. I will say this. Whether you're Creighton or whether you're Illinois on a 6-game losing streak, Ohio State on a 4-game losing streak, Wisconsin in the NCAA tournament, if you shoot bad, you're probably going to lose a game. I mean, that it doesn't matter who you are. So yeah. I'd rather be in Creighton's position where I shoot well most of the time. And, you know, it's kind of silly to say, well, you know, if they have a bad night shooting, they're going to lose. Well, that could be said for anybody. I'd rather be a good shooting team and then have a bad shooting night once in a while than a bad shooting team and have a lot of bad shooting nights.
Thanks for wrecking my go-to statement when I want to look smart. Well, if they have an off shooting night,
oh God.
No, anyway, look, I made this point, but I think Creighton is a suspect team, not because they're prone to an off shooting night. It's just they don't have a defense. I don't think to overcome a bad shooting night, and so I think it's a bigger deal for them.
I guess I think you have to be really good at least one thing in the tournament. And you know, we always, I think, focus on the teams that are really good at defense, thinking that, well, if they have a bad offensive night, that'll get them through. I don't know. I think if you're really good at shooting, not scoring, but shooting, that's a valuable thing to have in the tournament, particularly when the three-point basket is so powerful in terms of momentum and leverage when it comes to possessions in the game. So, I don't know. Anyway, a couple other things I wanted to mention in this segment of the program. Interesting goings-on in the Pac-12 right now. Arizona State finally picked up a win against a top 50 opponent, so congratulations to them. They beat Utah, and they're kind of on the borderline right now. I think I actually had them in this most recent bracket. But, you know, you look at the rest of the Pac-12 at this stage. Arizona had a tussle with Utah. They ended up winning the game. UCLA beat Cal, and so now UCLA and Cal are tied for second. You got Washington up in the mix. They have no hope whatsoever of making the NCAA tournament. And then you've got, again, a huge group of teams down below that. You know, Arizona State, Stanford, Colorado, and then Oregon. Oregon, I mean, they won tonight, but I didn't have them in my field, Kyle, because I don't really think that teams that are 1-5 or 2-5 in their conference are going to get in. Now, obviously, they'll have a chance to rectify that, but what are you seeing out of this conference at this stage? Are you surprised that UCLA is staying up in the mix? Are you surprised that Oregon has fallen off? Like, what all is registering with you?
It's interesting. First, I have a question. I just want to see if you're consistent. Did you have a 1-4 North Carolina in the field?
I did, but that's because they were 2-4 at the time I actually put them in, and I felt like, well, Clemson, who I also had in the field, that was at least a halfway impressive win.
Okay, whereas, all right, fair enough. I'll give you that one.
Thank you. But I did that. It's funny because there were two teams that were affected by this. One of them was Oregon, and the other one was Baylor. I didn't have Baylor in my field either. And then I looked at it, and I was like, oh, North Carolina. But the fact that North Carolina had just beaten Clemson, that put them over for me.
Yeah, they bailed you out, I guess.
You had Arizona State in.
Yeah, I had Arizona State in.
The Sun Devils.
Yes, the Arizona State Sun Devils.
Wow.
Yeah, I surprised you every week. Last week, you were shocked that I had Texas in, and I ended up being right about that. And this week, I'm going to be right again about Arizona State.
I guess.
Hey, look. I mean, we'll go down their resume. I mean, they have the Utah victory, which isn't much, but it's at least something. They're 15-5. They're 4-3 in the conference. They're 4-4 in road and neutral games. They've played a top 100 schedule. And frankly, you look at the other teams that are at the very bottom of the field. They've either got hideous holes in their resume, or they played against subpar competition, or something along those lines. I look at, like, for instance, SMU, we've just kind of assumed should be in the field. And I look at SMU and I look at Arizona State, and I don't see a whole lot of difference between those two teams right now.
Well, Utah has not won a road game yet. They haven't won anything away from home.
Well, we're not talking about Utah. We're talking about Arizona State.
But, yeah, but you, I mean, they beat Utah at home.
I realize that.
Yeah, so, I mean, how much credit can you really give them for that? And then I guess their win over Colorado doesn't impress me because Colorado, it was also at home, and Colorado didn't do well on the road when they had Dinwiddie, and now that they're without him, how much credit can you really give them for that? I mean, you were right about Texas, but I didn't have Arizona State. If it were an 80-team field, I don't think they would have made my field.
Could somebody catch me up to speed? What was right about Texas?
I had them in last week, and Griggs freaked. And then this week, they won a couple of games that were impressive. They won at Baylor. They're 5-2 in the conference right now. They look really good. They're 16-4 overall. I think they're safely in the field at this point.
Well, Texas has the benefit of an SEC schedule.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I didn't think that doing the bracketology thing was attempting to be a prognosticator anyhow. So I don't know that Texas's week is either helpful or hurtful to a cause.
Well, right.
I just couldn't let a week go by where I didn't mess up who was and was not in the Big 12. So
right. Anyway,
If I can get my time back from David Griggs now, I will attempt to answer Galen's earlier question about
Prime Minister's. Yes, go ahead, please, sir.
I appreciate that. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Griggs, for a lot of your time. I'm not surprised by anything with the Pac-12 right now. Griggs has got me talking about the Big 12. I'm not surprised.
Try and keep it straight. Jeez.
I'm not surprised with anything with this league at the moment because UCLA is, from game to game, I don't know if they're too predictable. I think with Colorado's injury, I think Stanford is unpredictable. They went to got taken overtime today by USC and at the Galen Center. I just think this whole league is going to be kind of a bumpy ride the rest of the year. I think you've got Arizona at the top. We know that's consistent. And after that, I would say two through seven. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised on a nightly basis by pretty much anything in this league.
But how many of these teams do you see ultimately getting into the field?
I mean, the problem is I don't have enough faith in teams like Arizona State and Stanford going forward not to lose two teams like USC at the bottom or Washington State.
Stanford. Not to interrupt your time, Kyle, but Stanford almost lost to USC tonight. They had to go to overtime to beat USC, and them and Washington, I feel like, are kind of the two poison pills of this conference, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I don't trust any of these teams really to go and win the games they're supposed to win, and I think that's going to end up hurting them in the long run.
Well, they're in better shape than the SEC. We can at least agree on that, I think. let's talk about this just abomination of a conference. So you got two teams clearly at the top of the SEC: Florida, who's 6-0, Kentucky's 5-1, and I don't know what the hell to make of the rest of it. I mean, you got Ole Miss, who's not really in the mix for the field yet. You would talk about a team that I would put Arizona State in ahead of David Griggs. I would put them in ahead of Ole Miss at this point. But then you've got obviously Tennessee, who just has been just a dumpster fire of epic proportions. I mean, the games that they've lost have tended to look so bad that you ignore the fact that they've done decent things in other games. The Florida game that they played, 41 points on 59 possessions, they lose by 26, and granted, Florida is a good team, but Tennessee shouldn't have been that bad in that game. But yeah, this is the same Tennessee team that beat a very good Virginia team by 25 points, not a month ago. I don't know what to make of this Tennessee squad at all. I still have them in my field, mostly because I don't have anybody to replace them with at this stage. But that's kind of emblematic of the rest of the SEC outside of the top two teams. Who else do you see as even being in the hunt for a bid? Missouri? Is there anybody else besides that?
I have Missouri just out, and I have Arkansas just in.
I have it flipped, actually.
Okay, but I mean, when I literally have them last team and first team out, so we're not far off in the grand scheme of things on where those teams are. I mean, a case could be made either way.
I would take Arkansas over Missouri, mostly just due to the strength of the non-conference win against Minnesota on a neutral floor. I mean, that for me, that would be probably Now, I haven't done a seed list as you guys have, so I'm just kind of eyeballing this at the moment. But I would tend to take Arkansas, given the noise.
The thing about Arkansas that bugs me, that a couple of things, actually, are the 1-5 road and neutral record.
The one neutral. I was going to say, Arkansas won away from home?
Yeah, and then the fact they lost at Texas A&M, they lost at Georgia, they're 2-4 in the conference. And if you're bracketing based on what's going on today, a 2-4 team in the SEC, that's a real problem. I mean, I'm not really impressed with Missouri. And I will say, though, even though it was at home, the UCLA win looks better, I think, as time goes by. And the North Carolina State win on the road, even though North Carolina State's not going to make the field, that's not looking like a horrible it's not looking like a bad victory by any means or an underwhelming victory. I mean, they're at least giving teams some kind of play at home. So, I don't know.
How much do they give back by the loss at home to Georgia?
It's bad. And that's the thing, though, is that I think with both of these teams, they've got a lot of warts. And I guess the other option would be, well, none of them could make it. The other team I wanted to ask about was LSU. Do any of you see any legitimate path outside of beating Florida and Kentucky for LSU to make the field?
Not as a participant. I mean,
Well, that's kind of the point, is to be a participant, you know? David?
I had them pretty far out, to be honest, LSU. I am pretty unimpressed with the SEC. I had, like you said, Florida as a protected seed. I think I had Kentucky up there as well. And then I had no one to the bubble, where I had Tennessee and Arkansas just in and Missouri just out. And conceivably, I could see a situation where none of those three make it. Missouri is at Arkansas this week. And Missouri and Arkansas, if they played a best of 67 series, it would be 34-33, and whoever had the home court advantage would win. Those two teams never lose at home and never win on the road, seemingly. I don't think there's ever been a game you could look at as if it had already been played, quite like this upcoming Arkansas-Missouri game.
Let's move to another hideously overrated conference, and that's the Atlantic Coast Conference. If you had told the fathers of the ACC, Kyle, that their grand realignment scheme was going to result in an end-of-February standings where Syracuse, Pitt, and Virginia were the top three teams in the league, do you think they would have sent it back and said, no, give us something else entirely?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I will say yes to the question, but I also want to thank John Swofford for setting up Duke very nicely this week with games at Pittsburgh and at Syracuse in the same week. That is a cruel, cruel trick to play on one of your grandstanding members of the ACC. But I love it, and I'm going to thank him anyways.
Yeah, well, and it's funny, because I'm sure that when the schedule was originally set up, it was going to be, ha-ha, we're going to show those Big East bastards who's boss with this road swing. Yeah, I don't know if that's going to play. I don't know. I mean, Duke, we criticize Duke some. They have played better here as of late. Yeah. Although, I do question a little bit, like, so they beat the crap out of Florida State yesterday. Like, not a game, not a close game at all. But is that because Duke was good, or is it because Florida State's really not that good? Or at least not that good on the road. I don't get this Florida State team, what they've done so far this season. If you look at them, I mean, they've got a couple of wins that are more or less impressive. UMass and VCU on neutral courts. You gotta like those results, given how those teams have played. But beyond that, very uneven, and you know, they've gotten swept by Virginia. They obviously lost to Duke big time, and they really haven't played against a whole lot of other major competition. And the fascinating thing about their schedule is they're not going to again until they play Pitt on the 23rd of February. But you know, so you look at that and you say, well, maybe the Duke win wasn't that impressive. You know, they blew out Miami on the road. Miami's a very limited team. I don't know how to read this Duke squad at this point. And really, everybody south of the top three in this conference, David, I'm not really that sold on. I mean, Duke and Florida State, I think, are obviously going to make the NCAA tournament. But Wake Forest may be the next best team in this conference at that stage, and that's a frightening proposition if you're the ACC.
Yeah, that's very frightening. I don't know if it's more frightening that it's Wake Forest or that Chuck Bizdelic's team is the next best team in the ACC.
Chuck Bizdelic? Did he take over for Jeff? I mean,
Jeff Bizdelic, yes, that's how bad it has gotten in Winston-Salem. I mean, wow, it's just not going well. But
Chuck Bizdelic has people too.
Chuck, you know where Chuck Bizdelic coaches? The Big 12. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh my God, I'll just ignore that because I can't honestly think of what to say. But I think Florida State, they look good enough on paper because they do have some notable wins. But the thing about Florida State is that you don't know if they're going to get creamed by Wake Forest or if they're going to beat Duke. I mean, it's just, you just never know what you're going to get out of them.
Yeah.
They're not quite as North Carolina as North Carolina is, but they're right. More North Carolina than anybody else in the league other than North Carolina.
Well, that's the thing. There's a lot of that with the ACC right now. And you look at Clemson, who just, I mean, they got walloped at North Carolina. They got walloped at Pitt. They're a bit player at best. Wake Forest really hasn't beaten anybody, although they did beat North Carolina, strangely enough. But you look at the rest of their non-conference schedule, there's really nothing of note. They have no bad losses. They really have no good wins. Maryland, no. North Carolina State is kind of hanging around. North Carolina State's got a better overall record and conference record than North Carolina at this stage, but they have no hope whatsoever of making the tournament. And you get that's it. You get past that. That's basically all of the teams that even are going to sniff the tournament. And so, Kyle, I look at this, and I mean, what do you think? Five teams, six teams out of this conference at this stage?
Yeah, five safely. I think six is, I mean, just depend. It's going to depend on how the rest of the season shakes out. I mean, it's not good for the ACC, like you said. I mean, they came in, you know, this was supposed to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, and now they're looking at maybe one third of their 15 teams actually getting in. It's not a good scenario. They really need, and it's unfortunately for them not going to get any better the rest of the season. I mean, these teams are what they are. Like you said, I think Duke is, I mean, Duke's showing signs of their defense being fixed a little bit. I don't think that it's going to be good enough for them to be a top 10 team, but I mean, I think they'll be a top 20 team the rest of the season. But you know, for the ACC, that's not going to cut it. I mean, when Pittsburgh's your second best team right now, and Virginia's your third best team, or even a top 25, Duke is your third best team. It's not a good scenario for the ACC. Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny because we keep waiting for things to coalesce a bit, and they just haven't at this point. It's fascinating, you know, watching some of these teams sneaking into the lower reaches of the bubble. Like, for instance, I think you can make a legitimate case for two teams out of Conference USA making this field. And that really shouldn't happen, but it's happening because you're not seeing ACC teams, SEC teams, Pac-12 teams, West Coast Conference teams being able to step up and take those spots away.
You realize Appleby for Louisiana Tech's injured for the rest of the year, don't you? So that's going to really hurt them.
Well, fine, but let's wait until they lose before we shovel dirt on them.
Well, good point. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
they should be able to run over the league even without him. But
right, and you know, and if they run over the league without him, I mean, there's not a team I see in the ACC that has a road win of the quality of a road win at Oklahoma, which is what Louisiana Tech has. And granted, even if they don't have that player, they still got that on their resume.
Right. Griggs can't hold on to a shovel anyway. He just pushes the wheelbarrow and tips it over.
That's right. So, anyway.
I have to ask real quick.
Go ahead.
And we might be getting to this, I don't know. How many Atlantic 10 teams made your field?
That's a good question. Let me pull up my handy-dandy ratings here as I do that. So my A-10 teams that were in the field, I had St. Louis, obviously, as the leaders. I had UMass.
Yes.
I had Virginia Commonwealth.
Yes.
I had George Washington.
Okay, so four?
Four.
Okay, and I think Dayton is going. I mean, just when you think they've hit the bottom, they get shovels out and start digging.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how bad they have gotten.
I would say at this point, the other team that I'm keeping an eye on at this stage out of the A-10 is Richmond. You know, Richmond's top 60 in KenPom. They beat UMass, which is helpful. They're 14-6. They're 5-4 road and neutral. Top 100 strength of schedule. They've helped themselves here over this last couple of weeks, and I think that that's important obviously. I mean, they've won four games in a row. They beat Dayton, UMass, and St. Joe's, granted, all at home. They have a huge road swing coming up this next week. They have to go to St. Louis, and they have to go to Virginia Commonwealth. If they could split those games, I think they'd be in my next field.
And that's another thing that we have been getting into with, you know, the SEC being down, which the SEC is basically typically down.
Yes.
You know, the ACC not being as good. The Big East, where are these bids going? I think they're going to the Atlantic 10.
Yeah.
I mean,
you look at the Atlantic 10, the Big East, and the AAC. Now, with the Big East, you're probably looking at a cap of four, given what's going on, given what's happening with Georgetown and Marquette's inability to win important games. I think in the AAC, obviously you've got, you know, Louisville, and you've got Cincinnati, who almost lost today. That was a bizarre game. Memphis, right. SMU. And then I think that's it. Is there anybody else?
UConn. I think UConn.
I'm sorry, UConn. I don't want to give Lee a heart attack. But, yeah, UConn would be the other team. So there's five there. Yeah, I think that the leverage bids are going to be the fourth, fifth bids out of the A-10, the fifth bid out of the AAC, maybe even the fourth bid out of the Big East. That's where the ACC, if some of these teams don't start putting together a series of wins, that's where they're going to end up losing out, because these teams, while none of them have dynamite resumes, they've all done more than most of the teams that are competing in the ACC for those bids.
Yeah, they have. So.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you've got there is really a dearth of good mid-major teams this year that could steal bids by losing. There's not teams out there in the West Coast this year. I mean, St. Mary's, BYU, and Gonzaga are all middling right now.
And And Kyle, something I want to ask you about in that vein, you know, a team that a lot of people just kind of penciled in as an at-large, regardless of whether they won their tournament or whether they won their conference, was Harvard, because Harvard was riding, you know, they had a top 30 KenPom rating, but they just lost hideously on the road to Florida Atlantic. First of all, I don't understand, why did they play that game? Do we know? Did they owe them money or something? I mean, what happened?
Have you been to Boca Raton? It's kind of nice this time of year. It's cold up in Boston.
It is cold in Boston. But they lost that game. They dropped 20 spots in the power rankings. And right now, I didn't even have them in my field, because I think Columbia is leading the Ivy, so I had them in as my auto bid there. I don't think Harvard warrants a bid at this point.
Florida Atlantic wouldn't come up to play at La Vieta's Pavilion, so I'm sure that's why.
Well, Harvard needs to win the Ivy League. They're in a unique position because they're really not like other mid-majors who need to play their way into a position to get in at large. I mean, they do, but really, if you don't win the Ivy League, it means you lost at least two games to very bad teams.
Yeah, so, that's true. Yeah. Well, and I guess my point was, going back to Kyle here, you look at the mid-majors, and that's not completely an accurate adjective, or whatever, but there are very few that are in the range where you could consider giving them a bid without winning their conference. I mentioned the two.
By very few, you mean two.
Well, okay, so you've got Gonzaga, who's still in the mix. I mean, they've actually done okay. They don't have any impressive wins, but they've done enough that they're at least in the top 25 or top 30 in the power rankings. You've got Southern Miss / Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech's got the better resume, I think, overall. Yeah. Although Southern Miss has played a better schedule, that's an argument can be made there. You've got Green Bay, who's only got one win of note, and that's the one at home against Virginia. And then you got Stephen F. Austin, who's beaten nobody. And outside of that, really, I mean, you're not looking at a whole lot of at-large worthy teams, period, there. So it will be interesting to see how that whole situation plays out, because it's going to save the bacon of some major conference teams that wouldn't normally get in.
Yeah, there just aren't really any bid stealers out there this year. And I think it's an awkward position, because, you know, some of the larger conferences we thought were going to have a lot of bids, like the ACC, the Big Ten to even a lesser extent. I mean, the Big Ten we thought would have a chance at 7 or 8 early in the year. It looks like that's not going to happen. The ACC is looking at 5 or 6. So, and there's not any bid stealers at the bottom in the mid-major league. So, like you said, I mean, the A-10, even some of these mediocre teams in the Big East could end up being the beneficiaries of this situation.
Yeah. So, you know, as we look forward, obviously that's going to be something to keep an eye on is how, you know, any of these teams that are you know at the top of their mid-major leagues play down the stretch. Any stumble is really going to put them in a position like we saw with Harvard, where they're just not going to have an opportunity to make the tournament unless they win their conference, whether it's through the Ivy League's regular season or whether it's through the other conferences' tournaments. So
maybe Jimmy Dykes was right about the Big 12 getting 7.
Maybe he was. I will say this about that. The Big 12 is going to be an interesting conference from a bid perspective because if you look at it, they've got, I think, a one seed in Kansas, obviously. At least I think it's obvious. They've played so well against such good competition. You've got Oklahoma State, who's probably going to be in the 4 range. And then you know, Iowa State, I think they could still be in the 3-4 range, but they got to start winning games. And then you've got Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas State, who are kind of in that, I could see them being seeded anywhere from 7 to 11. That's really about it. I mean, West Virginia is the only other team that got even like a somewhat of a chance of getting in, and really West Virginia doesn't have much of a chance at this point because
they did too much damage
to themselves early on in the season.
Right.
But that's going to be a meat grinder conference, and I think all those teams will either be really prepared for tournament play or be really exhausted by the time the tournament actually rolls around. But they're not getting 7 teams. That's foolhardy. Anyway, let's last 10 minutes or so, let's go ahead and jump in to our upcoming games here. We got several games throughout the course of the week that are worth talking about. Let's start off, actually, in the Big 12. And David, let me start with you. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Bedlam in Norman. In Norman, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, a one-point favorite, according to Pomeroy, in this contest. Who do you like here and why?
I like Oklahoma because they're at home. They've been playing very well at home ever since, that loss to Louisiana Tech. And it's not that I'm impressed with Oklahoma, although I am. I'm more or less underwhelmed with Oklahoma State. This is a humongous rivalry. The temperature of it this year is particularly hot. It's just one of those games. I think they're going to split. I think Oklahoma wins a close game in Norman, and Oklahoma State blows them out later on in Stillwater.
Kyle, you got a call on this game?
You know, To be honest, I think Oklahoma State's being undersold a little bit. I mean, they're sitting there with a 16-3 record. They haven't been lighting the world on fire. But, you know, after a bad first half and Lawrence, they came back and gave Kansas all they could handle in the second half and made it close at the end. I'm not sold on Oklahoma yet. I know it's going to be jacked there in Norman for this game. I think Oklahoma State wins this, though.
I mean, I kind of like Oklahoma for the same reason that David mentioned, because they are at home. I will say, I do think you're right, though, Kyle, that Oklahoma State's being undersold. 3 losses by a total of 10 points on the season, and all of them away from home. The comeback against Kansas was excellent. The loss at Kansas State looked bad at the time. It doesn't look bad anymore. I mean, that's a decent Kansas State team. Yeah. I do think that, you know, even if they lose this game to Oklahoma, they've got some, you know, they've got Baylor, who looks like they don't know what they're doing at this point, coming up on Saturday, and then they have a game against Iowa State next Monday. They have a very interesting schedule here over the next couple of weeks. But I'll give Oklahoma just a little bit of an edge in this one simply because they're at home, and I think that I don't know, there's something about this series where I really feel like the home team has a little bit of an extra advantage. The other game, Kyle, that is of note on Monday, we already mentioned it slightly, Duke traveling to Pitt. We're still kind of waiting on Pitt.
You planned this. I know you planned this.
I didn't. It was a complete accident. It was just the way that things fell. But, you know, Pitt, they finally started picking up some wins. We were asking them to, and they really had to hit ACC play to do it. But you know, they won at NC State. They won at Maryland. They blew out Clemson at home. We want to talk about Creighton and whether they belong at their spot in the power rankings. Pitt is 5th in the Pomeroy. They're 3rd in the BPI. And the schedule strength says that they've done this against the top 100 schedule, just barely, but it does say that. Who do you like in this game?
If you're a Duke fan and you're listening to this broadcast, I'm going to do you a favor right now with what I'm about to say. I'm almost ready to buy into Pitt qualitatively, almost. I think Pittsburgh is going to win this game because I'm starting to believe in them. They haven't beat anybody of consequence, but I've been impressed with how they've been beating them. I think Pittsburgh wins. If you're a Duke fan, you should be absolutely thrilled by that statement.
Yeah, you should be. I don't think you people realize how big of a deal that is, because that just guaranteed Duke's going to win by about 10 points. David, also going on Tuesday, we've got Kentucky at LSU. The Tigers have a chance in this one?
They have a chance. It's going to be a big game at home. LSU can play well. They don't always do. I think they're going to be up for this one. And Kentucky, still not the best road team in the world. I think Kentucky will win it, but LSU definitely has a chance. It's not going to be easy for Kentucky.
Let me stick with you on this real quick, David. I'm going to spare Kyle asking him this question about this game. But Missouri at Arkansas, your choice here is Arkansas?
My choice is Missouri. I think that I think it's going to be 91 degrees in Green Bay that day, and that Missouri will win that. No, of course, Arkansas.
the battle of the Walmart airs. Always a fun one.
David Griggs picking Missouri in that one would have been the most improbable call in the history of the show.
I had my fingers crossed. I really did. Kyle, big game in the Big Ten that night. Michigan State at Iowa. I mean, I was really looking forward to this game, and then Dawson went out for Michigan State. Iowa in a walk in this one, you think?
Probably not a walk. I think it's going to end up being probably closer than it should be. But, yeah, I can't see Michigan State actually winning the game. I think it'll end up being actually 4 or 5 points or less, but I do think Iowa's going to win without Payne and Dawson in the lineup.
Pomeroy really likes Iowa in this game. He's got him rated as a 7-point projected victor, which I was a little bit surprised by. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I like Iowa in that game, too. I think that bad time for Michigan State. But the nice thing is it almost underseed Michigan State because they're going to lose these games without Dawson. And then when they get him back and they get Payne back, I think that there's going to be some unhappy sixth seed somewhere that realizes they have to play Michigan State in the second round. Finally, a couple of games going on in the middle of the week on Wednesday. Kyle, Iowa State, Kansas. Iowa State, I mean, as good as they looked at the start of the year and as many people had started to believe in them, they've fallen on hard times. They've lost 3 of their last 4. They lost to this Kansas team at home. Any chance of them getting it done in Lawrence?
I like this Kansas team. They're my pick to win it all right now. I really love the way they're playing. I just can't see Iowa State going in. Iowa State's not defending people well enough to win this type of game. If they want to win, they're going to have to play better defense. I don't see it happening. I think Kansas wins by double digits.
All right. And David Griggs, Arizona so far one of the few undefeated teams remaining. They beat Utah tonight, obviously. They travel to the Bay Area. This week they play Stanford on the road, and then they play Cal on the road. Any chance that their undefeated season ends in either of those games?
No, I think they get both of those. Cal should be good. I don't know why they're not. On occasion they are, but really didn't look too good at UCLA today. Although they fell behind, came back, and then I believe they ended up. But I just think Arizona's going to go in there and win both of them rather handily.
I mean, have you guys looked at Arizona's remaining schedule in the conference? I mean, run it down for you. They got Stanford and Cal on the road. They got the two Oregon teams at home. They got Arizona State on the road. They got Utah and Colorado on the road. They got Cal and Stanford again at home, and then they got to go to Oregon State and Oregon. That's it. That's their Pac-12 schedule. Who's going to beat them?
No one.
I mean,
they've had a lot of close calls recently. Colorado was a close call.
I mean, they won that game by 12.
Well, I mean, did you see the Utah game today?
They won that game by 9.
It was close all the way through.
That was a 5-point game with 4 minutes to go.
I'm saying the closest game they've had that was the UCLA game. They only won that game by 4. It was a close game. But, I mean, you look at the rest of the games they played recently. They've been blowing people out. And, I mean, granted, yes, the Utah game was somewhat close today, but they still almost won by double digits.
I think they lose at Stanford. I'm on record.
Okay. You got you on record as they're losing at Stanford. I think they lose in the last game of the regular season to Oregon. But I think they win all of them up until that point. So, anyway. Well, Guys, any final thoughts before we wrap things up? David, let me start with you.
Stephen F. Austin has a bloated record. We talked about them briefly, but they will need to win their conference tournament.
Yeah.
That's just – I don't think they're in the same – as far as bid stealers, Wichita State, obviously, for whatever reason, they missed the bus to St. Louis. I think Green Bay is going to be all right. Gonzaga, I think, has one more strike, and they'll be all right. But there just aren't many. I mean, I really think the board of directors needs to call an emergency meeting and shorten the field to 56 teams this year.
I would be completely in favor of that. Kyle, any final thoughts from you?
No, I'm glad you mentioned Wichita State because it will be interesting to see if they finish the season undefeated.
Indiana State's going to get them.
Yeah, I think if they're going to lose, it's going to be the Indiana State. If they get by that one, I think they run the table.
My final thought, I really don't have one actually. I look at the way that the. Yeah, I know. That's what they pay me for. But no, in reality, I think that this one seed situation is really fascinating to me right now. And looking at the top of the field, I think Arizona, Syracuse, Kansas, right now, those are your three top teams. I would probably put them in that order right now. I might be persuaded to put Kansas ahead of Syracuse, but you look at the next group of teams. I think Villanova, Creighton, Wisconsin, Florida. I think Iowa, I think Michigan State, maybe not so much with the injuries right now, but I think all of those teams are in contention along with Michigan for that last one seed spot. And I'm really curious to see how that plays out because we had some shifting last year in February of who we perceived the top teams to be. And there's always teams that unexpectedly fall apart during this time of the season, and we really don't see it coming in most cases. And, it happened last year. Remember Michigan, I think, going into this weekend last year was the number one team in the country. And they actually ended up losing, I think, four games down the stretch.
Yeah. Four out of the last six, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, they lost. It was actually 1, 2, 3, 4. They lost five of their last nine. Or five of their last ten. And then they lost to Wisconsin, and they ended up a four seed in the tournament. This is a team that was number one in the country. They ended up going to the title game. So, it's always interesting to watch this process take hold, and I'm really curious to see what happens with it. So, anyway, you'll have to watch us on Twitter next week because we're not going to be doing the show on Sunday unless they move the Super Bowl. If they move the Super Bowl to Saturday, we'll be on Sunday. If they don't,
I'll talk to my people.
You'll see what you can do about the weather conditions out there.
I think it's going to be more dependent on Richard Sherman's people.
It probably. Absolutely right. Anyway, absolutely. David Griggs and Kyle Lamb, I'm Galen Clavio. Thanks for joining us on the Bracket Racket, folks. We'll be back next week sometime with more talk on college basketball. We'll catch you on the flip side. So long, everybody.